on its own, and it need not do what the other colleges are doing. So Brooklyn could do one thing, we could do something else, City could do something else altogether. The decision has been entrusted to me as president to make, on the understanding that I will engage in shared governance. As the senators all know, shared governance is traditional in academic institutions. I don't just go off and make a decision. So I've already consulted with the student association and received their input. The provost and I met yesterday with the PNB, that's the Personnel and Budget Committee that consists of the department chairs. We received their input. I am pleased to receive your input to answer Professor Grover's question. It is my understanding that it is very important to solicit your input, to listen to your input, and that's why I'm here. I welcome that input. This is not a matter that is voted upon by any of the bodies. It is a matter that will be decided by me in consultation, meaning following this input and discussion with the cabinet, in particular with the provost, Betsy Hendry, who is the chief academic officer. It is an internal Senate matter how you conduct your business. It was not my original understanding that this would be voted on. That doesn't mean that the student resolution can't be voted on, but it's entirely up to you how you choose to proceed. I'm here to obtain your input, however you choose to offer that input. And if you wish to vote on a student resolution, that's the Senate's business, and I respect that.
Right, and my apologies, I lost connection. I totally shut down. And yes, it would just be on the resolution. I do not know where we are, Sid, if we moved on. Well, we have to go through the committee reports, but in
Simone? Simone, right now, there was a motion and a second made regarding the resolutions. So the Senate has to formally vote on the Student Association resolution, which- so
just to accept the resolution, it's just to accept the resolution itself. So Sid, you can continue with that before we move on. So the motion was made.
May I make a comment?
Sure.
It's related. It's related to grading. It's related to student performance in classes. And I must say that I am totally sympathetic with this motion. I've watched my students suffering terribly. And anything that we can do to take away some of that anxiety, I'm all in favor of. However, I have 95 students registered in my class. 12 of them have never done a thing, have not showed up to classes, virtual classes, have not handed in a single assignment. And I don't understand why that's happening. I think it's something that should be looked into. I'd like to raise that as an issue that someone, I'm not sure who's the appropriate group would be to look into that, but I think it's a serious problem. I don't know if they're gaming the system by getting tuition assistance and then not participating and at the last minute dropping out. I have no idea, but for 12 out of 95 people not to do anything at all is unusual in my experience. I hope that all of them are not suffering from COVID. I doubt that all of them are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I would like to expand that discussion during the new business portion as well. That's where that will be taken up, Alan. That's okay. But I think we need to, whether we need to vote on the resolution that's been presented.
Could I ask something about the second option, which is
understood,
accepting some classes and but not including classes that are deemed, I don't know, I'll put on a list of classes that shouldn't be included. So, you know, I know people, I just heard about this morning. Maybe I'm behind the curve on this.
And Tom, that's going to be discussed in 7B under new business. So exactly what you're saying. So again, all in favor of accepting.
Simone, I'm very sorry, but I asked, perhaps this was when you were gone, I mean, we'll in effect have preempted the discussion in 7.
That's what I see. So
if we vote on this resolution now.
Stephen, can you make a motion to postpone it?
Well, I move that we postpone the discussion of the resolution to 7B or 7C, whatever it is that.
Can I get
Or else move the discussion up to now. I don't mind which way we do it, but put them together.
Can we move the discussion up till now?
Second.
Okay, so we're moving the discussion up to now. So we're going to rearrange the order, and I'd like to open the floor now. This is with regards to the credit, no credit policy that was just put out by CUNY. If I'm not mistaken, it may have been Monday or Tuesday morning. A decision has to be submitted to CUNY by the campus administration no later than tomorrow. But I want to say that this is simply a discussion. There will be no voting matters on the topic at hand. This is a discussion. I'd like to keep it brief, and I'd like us to remain civil and agree to disagree. So I will open the floor for discussion, and I see Teresa.
Thank you, Simone. I just want to raise an issue for all of us in education. And I think we all have great sympathy for students who are suffering with issues related to COVID. Those of us who are sort of intermediaries for the state in education, and I know there are other programs that are similar, we're very concerned because we are giving kids the go-ahead, students the go-ahead to serve the community. And if the state has certain GPA requirements, we have certain GPA requirements. For example, in the course that I'm currently teaching, methods, if a student does not earn a B or better, they are not considered qualified for student teaching. Now, passing could be C, but then they get put ahead when we don't necessarily think that these particular students should be teachers, not related to COVID necessarily. Our students have been talking to us all semester. We've been on top of them. We've adjusted our course requirements given the new environment, and we feel like we've done that to a satisfactory stance. I haven't received any complaints from my students, nor have my colleagues. And I just want to voice and get on the record that we are very concerned about putting kids into a certification program and pushing them ahead through a certification program through the state that may not be qualified based on a grade of credit when they would not have earned the required B or better. Thank you.
I think I saw Zaire. Did you raise your hand? I think I saw that.
Yes, I did. Good afternoon, students, faculty, and staff. My name is Zaire Kalut, and I'm the student representative of the college. As Ali stated, when schools originally shut down, there were about 2,000 cases per day. Now we have 739,000 total cases. It's gotten worse, but our policies have not changed to really reflect that. We have gotten to a new normal that really doesn't exist. Students every day face evictions, are working extra shifts to support the whole family. They're facing food insecurity and are not always at the liberty to travel to the food pantry even. And they're facing a stark lack of access to supplies. So we can't turn our backs on them. What we need is the most inclusive grading policy. Last semester when we had our credit, no credit policy, we were clearly told the vulnerabilities that come with the credit, no credit policy. And it isn't an option that we use frugally, but an option out of absolute necessity. Though we had a flexible grading policy last semester, many of our students could not complete the semester and texted me personally saying this would not work for them. I can't even imagine how many will lose now if it's not as flexible. It's not just about getting our students in the door, it's about support and student retention and helping them get their foot out the door in 4 years. Many students though in pre-professional studies who would most likely be excluded with option B are transferring into CUNY grad school programs, and other graduate schools outside of CUNY are understanding and accommodating. When I went to a grad school fair, schools like Johns Hopkins were saying that they would be looking at our applications holistically and not just our grades due to the pandemic. And most of all, our students should have a choice. And if it turns out that it cannot work for them, they should have a choice to reverse it, because we did it last semester, and that would be full and total support for our students.
Thank you, Zaire. Alexander Kestenbaum. Okay.
Sorry. I'm here.
Go ahead, Alexander.
A bit of a connection issue. So first of all, I just want to thank Zaire for making great points and for leading us during a pretty unusual time to be a college student. I just want to address one point very quickly by Dr. Allen, who I think does raise a good point, and I certainly respect where you're coming from, but there are always bad apples. There are always those who cheat the system. There are always those who don't put in the effort, but to simply say that because of those minority and because of those bad students, those who have cheated the system, therefore we shouldn't provide a credit or no credit as a whole. I'll tell you from a personal experience, my uncle just died this morning from COVID, and I have a final on Monday. So I'm expected to mentally process what just happened while keeping my job because I have to afford rent, all the while making sure I fit in time to study. So credit, no credit is the least. This is the absolute bare minimum that Queens could be doing. I've been pushing for tuition breaks because the fact that the winter semester costs the exact same as last winter semester, you know, that's a fight I'm trying to have, but no one seems to be interested in having that fight. So at the very least, credit, no credit is the bare minimum that Queens College should be doing to show their students that they matter and that they've been going through a lot of, excuse my political incorrectness, a lot of crap the past year, okay? Their internships were canceled, their jobs they were laid off from, their semester, junior semester abroad, done. And so again, the bare minimum should just be, we hear you, we support you, these are unusual times. And for the hundreds of students who against all odds said, no, my education comes first and I wanna persevere and show up to my classes and put in the work and submit my assignments on time, this is giving them that mutual respect that I appreciate what you're doing. And this is something that we as an institution believe is the right step in the right direction. So I yield back my time.
Thank you so much.
Point of personal privilege.
Thank you.
At no point did I say I objected to the proposal.
Right.
I was just raising an issue. So Alexander, you put words in my mouth that didn't belong there.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page then.
Thank you. Stephen Grover. I'm not sure if he's here. Okay, I will go to Kayla. Kayla Kemp.
Thank you, Simone. Hi, everybody. My name is Kayla Kemp and I'm one of the student senators of Queens College. Last semester, I was going through immense mental health issues and so were my fellow peers. If we extend the credit no credit policy for this semester for all classes, all students would feel mentally ease. From what students have been telling me, even if it's my friends or my sorority sisters, we are going through immense pressure from classes because they're online. And on top of that, some students are essential workers despite them working the holidays as well. Other students are going through unemployment depression because they can't support their families, such as their children, their sick relatives, or even themselves. And to add on all that, some students can't even support themselves for food. I am thankful for the food pantry, but some students just need time off their hands so they could go get the food because some students do have children. And counseling services have not been a good service for some students because students have a lack of privacy due to the fact that they're in the same spaces as their abusers or as their parents. And if we extend the credit no credit policy for this semester, all students will be at ease and all students will have a sense of motivation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kayla. We're gonna keep it at 2 minutes. I'm gonna go to Joe Pastore and I'm going in order of people who've raised their hand. So, and Joe?
Thank you, Simone, but if I'm being honest, I think there are other people on the list whose hand was raised.
Oh no, I'm gonna go across and I'm gonna get to you. That's why I asked for 2 minutes.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you. So I'm Joe Pastore. I'm from the mathematics department. first and foremost, I would say that faculty members are concerned about student issues for everybody that's part of CUNY. It's a hard time, and I'd like to think the faculty members that I know are sensitive to all of that. Having said that, the math department position is that there are some concerns about the credit, no credit policy. Some of those concerns in particular are things like students moving through a major and having many D's in classes from the major and not being prepared for the job market. Other concerns include students that are in sequential courses, you know, moving from something like pre-calculus through a calculus sequence and being able to move on to the next course, if you will, without the proper prerequisite background. So I think there's a lot of concerns in terms of students progressing through a degree. And then at some point we anticipate being back in live usual classes where we're not online. And now students are in advanced courses without the proper background. So I think there are a lot of concerns from all different angles. And I just hope that the president makes the right decision in terms of choice of the different options for the credit, no credit policy. I know there are different options and I just hope he picks the right one that's best for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I see Andrea.
Hi everyone. I am a student, Andrea Buzon, also a senator. And I would just like to raise this quick fact that I fear that this has created an atmosphere of miscommunication with students. Many students do not understand these policies that we are under right now, and I am a peer mentor myself in this school as well. So some of the questions that have frequently came up about the PNC for this semester and raising confusion from last semester is that just a lot of students, they feel that they have to make these decisions last minute with everything that is going on, or taking these courses over the last semester thinking that they can pull through and start fresh with the fall 2020. Like, there's still a lot of wraparound from the last semester. But of course things have picked up. It's been like a roller coaster back and forth. And also, just as mentioned before, the mental health and everything that the students are going through, in addition to professors and everybody that is going through things right now. The world is constantly changing around us. So, you know, we can't really assume that each student has virtually kept up with these policies and that they have yet to be released. And I know that it is due within tomorrow, within the next 24 hours, I believe. So it just causes a lot of confusion. And I just fear that the miscommunication will be coming up through the students and the association and everything like that. So after all, just looking at how many students have shown up today and have joined this meeting as well in order to understand this policy and what is actually going on and within the school. So for this policy, it's just imperative for us to be able to make these decisions for ourselves in regards to how it affects our grades and our financials and things like that.
Yes. Thank you, Andrea. I have four more and then we are going to conclude the discussion. So I have Joe Coburn, Ali, Estrella, and Enrique. So let's start with you, Joe.
Greetings, everybody. Greetings, faculty and students. I don't want to repeat anybody as much as I don't have to. So the two points that were brought up when we met with, when our president met with administrations were pertaining to the graduate school admission policy. However, CUNY has passed a universal policy that would be flexible with the grading in terms of graduate schools. And a lot of private institutions has also said, came out formally and stated that they are going to pass flexible, indefinite policies that would allow a gray line for them to interpret certain situations. The second issue that was brought up was that students would lose their TAP if they opt out with the no credit. But regardless of that, if you fail the class and get a letter grade, you still will not receive your TAP. So rather than the focus be about grade building, it should be more about grades preservation. Because if you do bad and we're forced to accept a low level grade, then rather than help students, they will end up feeling on the repercussions of that. So to sum up everything, I really want to draw on the mantra of this institution. We learn so that we may serve. We have to ask ourselves, are we truly serving students to the best of our ability? This plan will surely backfire on our institution. I was the president of Student Associate last year, so I'm well aware of the financial crisis that we face. Many students have already left the school opportunity because of the pandemic, with job loss, losing their jobs, food insecurity, and all these issues. We're the ones connected to the students, And what they're saying is, if we're the one policy that is holding them down is the credit pass, no credit policy. If we take that one thing away from them that is pushing them to further their education and higher education, what does that show them? It shows that we have no sympathy. It shows that we're not really regarding their struggles. And I hear all the faculty when they say that they care about our issues, and forgive us for speaking so passionately. I don't want to come off as aggressive, but we have to think about the long-term situation. It would be better to do this and support students so that they stay here, because in the long term, student retention is a major crisis. It's a major issue that we're focusing on. And if we really want to solve this issue, option A is the best bet to follow through. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Estrella.
Hi, my name is Estrella Perez. I am a computer science major, and I also wanted to bring some points into attention. I think everybody else stated most of the things I wanted to say, but I also wanted to include the aspect of the inclusivity of students with disability for the credit, no credit, because some students are not able to get the necessary support they need because they are at home. And you could be the smartest person, you could be really good at your work, you could submit most of your work in one exam that you can take, that's like 45% of the grade or 35% of the grade, because of one bad situation that could happen the day before, you could fail a whole class just by one exam. Like a previous student mentioned that their family member passed away this morning and they have a final on Monday. Simply that one situation, that one aspect could change the whole outcome for the whole class. It doesn't necessarily have to be that a student isn't doing well in the class. It could very much be that the student is doing well and that one situation changed the whole outcome. And I really think that we need to think about the inclusivity of students with mental health issues, physical health issues, students with disabilities, because we are disconnected. We're not communicating with the school. I personally have an autoimmune illness. If we weren't online, I would have dropped out of school. So I cannot risk getting sick. And I really do appreciate the no credit credit to other students who are not doing good in class because of simple situations like that. It's a hard time for everybody. And I really think we need to put into consideration, just because there's a few students that are, you know, maybe not thinking about the overall of the class, it doesn't necessarily erase the students who truly do need the no credit credit policy, because it stops them from continuing on and moving on to the next chapter in their careers and their education and their future.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Enrique, and then we'll end with Ali. Enrique Pena?
Hi. hello, everyone. My name is Enrique Pena. I'm a student senator. I just wanted to say that we're thinking and talking about the majority and only refer to a minority when it is a bad apple, not doing what they're supposed to and getting benefited from the policy. Not putting words on anyone's mouth. I just want to talk on behalf of students that fall under the crack of the support that Queens College has provided and plans to provide. This pandemic is no longer just about students getting sick or not. Students are already sick. We deal with mental health issues. We deal with losing loved ones, even housing insecurity and food insecurity, which was already an issue before the pandemic, affects a student now. Like, how can they attend class and do their work? It is a new normal, and we should be thankful, thoughtful, everyone. Full disclosure, because I don't care anymore about remaining anonymous when I'm trying to represent students like me, I'm undocumented. I did not get anything from the CARES Act or any kind of financial support from either city, state, federal government. My family and I are on our own. We lost our jobs right before the pandemic, and we just got it a few months ago, and we're just trying to make ends meet now. I have not done much in my classes and as I would have hoped. And that is because I have to work full time to make ends meet and still pay my tuition so I can continue studying, because we don't qualify for financial aid. We don't qualify for any kind of financial aid. I ask respectfully, what are you doing to support students in that situation? at least the least you can do is to expand the credit, no credit for all students in all conditions, and like for everyone. That is the minimum you can ask for the college to support all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Enrique. And we're gonna end this with Ali. Please.
Thank you. So bringing up this policy, it's like what Enrique just talked about, what my senators just, fellow senators just talked about, bringing back retention, like our students' mental health, our students' food insecure, our students are jobless, our students are homeless, right? As a former steering member of USS, I've seen our students, I've worked with students all over CUNY, and I've talked to many students who reached out to us who work, who are homeless, who are food insecure, who are job insecure, and this is continuing to happen. And we gave out emergency grants just so our students can survive. You see, students like Enrique who are undocumented, they don't receive anything financial, any help at all. They don't receive unemployment. They don't receive FAFSA. They don't, how do you expect them to support themselves and survive during a pandemic when they're not able to focus? They're trying to survive. Like they're literally trying to survive, you know? And it's, when you think about like, it's not only us, we're not only asking Queens College out of this nation to vote, like to do this. It's not something unprecedented. Around the country, Stanford University, University of Illinois, University of New Brunswick, University of the California State University Chancellors, Chancellery gave approval to all 23 campuses to implement the credit no credit policy. University of Virginia implemented the policy, University of Charlotte implemented the policy, Michigan State implemented the policy, Pitt University implemented the policy, Albion University implemented the policy. So we're not the only ones asking. There's students around the whole world, around the whole nation who are suffering through this pandemic, asking for our educators just to just feel what we're going through, what we're going through at this moment. We're not able to do our best, right? If to respect to one of our senators, Senator Teresa Girl, the professor, she's mentioned that some of her students and her department haven't reached out with any problems. And I'm grateful, I'm happy that her students, her department don't have any issues and are thankfully healthy. But look, professor, we have over 100 students in this Senate meeting right now. Please look at the chat. You're gonna see over 100 students testifying to you what they've gone through this semester, how they've been affected, how this policy would be such help to them. Like I said, I'm happy that your students in the department are very well, but look at the student testimonies in the chat right now. So it's detrimental and vital that we pass this resolution and that we pass this policy to implement the credit no credit policy, because our students are not able to do the best of the ability that they have been able to before this pandemic happened. And with regarding to degree progression, PAs, students like PAs have been able to progress and become PAs without even shadowing doctors. And it's like this having this policy is what would take the stress out of our students. When, for God forbid, if one of our students right now is gets COVID-19 or his family gets COVID, their family gets COVID-19, how do you expect the student to give their best ability into the final examination right now? It's not, yes, there are bad apples, but this option is not for everybody to use. We're fighting for the option for those who are necessity for those students, okay. Right? It's a necessity for those students who have no other option that they need to use this policy so they can succeed academically and progress.
Thank you so much, Ali. And finally, Zaire.
Can I speak?
Yes, please. And then Zaire, and then we'll move into the next phase. Yes, please.
I started listening to everyone at the meeting, and I had an open mind, but I want to support the credit, no credit for the upcoming term. My students, many of them are in crisis, and they did not ask to go totally online. They are in the middle of financial crisis. They are in the middle of personal crisis. They are in the middle of health crisis. They're in the middle of food scarcity. Those of us who teach, we want to be fair. Mm-hmm. Are there some students who are not doing what they're supposed to do? Yes, there always will be, even when we go back in person. But this is a crisis that our country faces. And now the crisis is rearing its ugly head again in very, very big time fashion. So I know that this is an advisory body and I understand that, but we always encourage our students to speak up as part of our participatory democracy, and they have. And I think that they represent the majority of the views of the students, and I would want to be supportive of them under the circumstances that I witness myself every day.
Yes, and I totally wholeheartedly agree. And Zaire, I'm going to end with you.
Yes, I'd just like to conclude. So I just wanted to answer some of the counterpoints to our arguments. So one of the counterpoints was our inability to progress through a degree if we just keep on using PNC. And for that, I can't state Ali's point, a lot of PAs did not get to shadow doctors this year, but they're still PAs now, right? So it shows that we can still progress through our degrees with kindness, right? We've been to graduate school fairs. I went through a graduate school fair, University of Virginia, Johns Hopkins University. Top universities in the country are saying that they're doing holistic reviews of our applications and not just looking at our GPAs. So that goes for the graduate schools, and that's progressing through a degree. And in regards to financial aid, which I also heard, if you get an NC, it is a fail. So either way, you don't get the credit. Either way, your financial aid goes under, because if you go under its credits, then you don't receive financial aid. So that covers financial aid. A lot of people said that students might not understand the implications that come with this policy. And I'm saying that that can be changed by properly warning the students, by properly letting them know like exactly the pros and cons of this. And with communication on our part, we can get the students to understand. And this is on a severe need-based situation. So students should have a choice. They should understand. It should be properly communicated with to understand the pros and cons of this and understand that if they really need this, that's when they should use it. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that being said, we did delay a motion to accept the student resolution on the credit, no credit policy. There was a second, and I'd like to put the motion back on the floor to accept the resolution for the student resolution on the policy. It is not to accept it as policy. That is not in the hands of this body. It is just to accept the resolution itself. So with that being said, I'm all in favor. Senators.
I vote aye.
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 Thank you, with the ayes. So I'm listening for anyone oppose or abstain, and if they would not like to do it publicly, they can send it to me in private chat and we will acknowledge it in that manner. For anyone who chooses not to say it publicly, but based on what I've heard, there is a majority that has accepted. So I will say that the resolution has passed and we will make note of that.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So moving on to committee reports, I'd like to move on with Ken, the UCC report dated November 12th.
Yes, I'd like to move the undergraduate curriculum committee minutes from November 12th.
I'm sorry,
I gotta go do something.
Sorry, can you mute yourself?
Yes.
No, not you, Ken. Huh. There's someone in the background.
I have a meeting, so it's on your own.
Okay, so I can't figure out how to mute. Roland, if you can put yourself on mute, Rolando. Thank you. I'm sorry. So Ken put a motion out to accept the November 12th. I'll pull that up. UCC report. Can I get a motion to accept? Unanimous consent.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any oppositions? Abstentions? Okay, so moved. Thank you. The next is the GCC report.
Yeah.
I'm getting to it. I'm sorry. I'm not as savvy. The GCC minutes dated November 4th. Ping?
Yeah. On behalf of GCC, I move for unanimous approval.
Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Abstentions. Thank you. So moved. The nominating committee report dated December 8th. Peshi had to leave and she asked that I ask for unanimous consent on the nominations report dated December 8th. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions. Thank you. Moving on to the old business, let me stop sharing, sorry. Old business, nominations to the nominating committee. I am looking for nominations for faculty of social sciences. Okay, moving on to faculty for arts and humanities.
Monica Casca.
Okay, can I get, do I need a second? I'm not sure how that worked, but I do thank you. Can I get a second for, thank you, Sid. So moved. We will make note of it. Thank you so much for agreeing. We will make note of that. Thank you so much. I'd like to move on to 6B, land acknowledgments. And with that being said, there is a slight update to that. As you know, land acknowledgments was presented at the last Senate meeting, and we've been in discussion with President Wu. President Wu has discussed it with his cabinet, and this appears to be a policy that is above Queens College and has to go to CUNY Central. So we are in the midst of working on it. And once it's been resolved and we can move forward, we will definitely bring it back to this body. So thank you for following up with us, President Wu. Moving on to 7A. We have some presentations. Thank you, students. I wish you stay around to view these presentations. And I'd like to introduce Dr. Feliciano. Just give me 2 seconds. I'm going to give you editing rights. And Dr. Feliciano, you're up first and you should be able to present.
Okay, hi everyone. I'm sorry, it's been a long meeting, so I don't want this presentation to be too long, but I think you're gonna find it informative. My name is Daria Feliciano, and I'm a professor in the economics department and the director of the Latin American and Latino studies. And I am presenting today on Hispanics in Queens, and together with Sarah Hinojos, a professor of media studies and LAL's advisory board. So I'm gonna try to set up a timer for myself so I don't go over the time. Okay. So I'm gonna do an overview of Queens, New York and New York City and Queens Hispanic population. And I'm gonna be followed by Sarah Hinojos, who's gonna talk about Queens College Hispanic population. This first chart gives you the percent of the population in New York State, New York City, and Queens that is of Hispanic origin. And that approximately 19% of New York State is Hispanic. New York City is 29%. Queens College is very close to the average in New York City, which is 28%. The population, you know, this other slide, I wanted to show how there is a wealth of different backgrounds, that Queens is a very diverse county. And I know you all have heard, this is the most diverse county in all of USA. And the Hispanic population here I show is 28%. Asian alone is close to 27%. Black and African American, close to 21%, and white alone, not Hispanic, is 25%. So we're kind of roughly a very close, grouping of different types of people. And in terms of Hispanic population in New York City, the largest groups are Dominican and Puerto Rican, with close to 30%. And then Mexican, Ecuador, El Salvador, and Colombian. In terms of foreign-born population, we know that Queens, as I said, is the most diverse county in the US and has the largest fraction of foreign-born population. Here we have a New York State, 23% of New York State is foreign born. New York City is 37%, but Queens, it's almost close to 50% of the population of Queens is foreign born, which is an amazing fact. And, you know, some people may say might be underestimated, given that we know some populations are less likely to be captured. In terms of how does Queens compare to other boroughs, Queens is by far has the largest percentage foreign-born population, which is 47%, and we're closely followed by, behind us is Brooklyn and Bronx, but we definitely are well above all other boroughs in New York City in terms of foreign-born population. Here I have, of those foreign-born populations, Latin Americans make the largest percent with about 47%. And then I just kind of gave you a flavor of what are the most important groups among the Latin American foreign-born populations. And South American is the largest group. So 23% of the Queens foreign-born population is from South America. 8% is from Central America. And 16% is from the Caribbean. And that doesn't just include Latin America, but it also includes Jamaica and Haiti. I was having troubles. Second languages in Brooklyn and Queens. I'm showing a map just to give you an idea how Queens College is surrounded by second languages, and the most common second language by far is Spanish, and it's all around Queens College. And finally, I want to show this graph shows public school Hispanic enrollment in Queens. And it is showing that actually the number of students who are Hispanics has been growing since 2015. And I want to underscore this because New York City per se has actually a declining number of students. And Queens, on the other hand, has actually a growing number of public school students, and the number that is Hispanic is growing. So it is contributing to the expansion, to the growth of Hispanics in the school district. And also I wanna say these are potentially future Queens College students. We should be expecting the percentage of students at Queens College that are of Hispanic origin to be growing in the next years to come. And I'm gonna leave it now with Sarah, who's going to continue our presentation. Thank you. Sarah Hinojos.
Let me give her the. Okay.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for still being here. And just like Zaida, I'm going to try to kind of speed through this, but also tell you the most important part of us, what we discovered as we gathered and got together for this presentation. I'll focus on the Latinx student profile at Queens College. And before, I just want to introduce myself a little formally. I'm in my third year in the Media Studies Department, and I'm also the senator for media studies, and I research linguistic accents in media and how that sound and voice continues to racialize Latinx communities as forever foreigners. I also want to, before I forget, thank the Office of Institutional Effectiveness that helped us with the data in terms of summarizing and gave us cool graphs to share with you. Whenever I present on Latinx communities, I like to use this image to remind people who might be unfamiliar and in terms of the diversity of Latinidad and of course the students and the people that we live around. And that is that being Latinx is an ethnicity and not a race, and that we belong to various racial groups. And there's also an assumption that we are this monolithic group because of mainstream media representations, but actually we are fairly diverse, which can create some issues in terms of gathering us and also gathering data, because there's an assumption also that the person filling out the data knows what category they are in. So just an FYI on that. This is the historical enrollment of various student groups of racial students on campus from 2008 to 2019. And something that we found significant was that from 2011 to 2012, this break here is that there's this big increase in Latinx students on campus. We don't know why. I wasn't here yet. I'm not sure if there was a diversity report that was made, but there was an increase from that year on campus. We are officially a Hispanic serving institution, which means that we have to have at least 25% of Latinx full-time undergraduate students. And out of our total population, which we're at almost 20,000 for 2019, we're at 28.4% of Latinx students on campus. And of course, once we enroll and have these students here with us, we have this amazing information of the diversity of the Latinx community. And so we have the top five locations of where students checked off their ancestry is, and that's from the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Colombia, Puerto Rico, and Mexico, which all you can see reflects the kind of state and borough numbers that Zaida presented. And also students were able to check off what their countries of birth are, and you see similarities with the country and location of ancestry that students were able to pick in the survey. And once, of course, students enroll, Latinx students actually have very similar trends to the popular majors on campus, which are psychology, computer science, elementary and early childhood education, biology, and accounting. And actually, when we looked at the numbers for all racial groups, Asian, white, and Black students, it is fairly similar with the top five majors. There might be one or two that are not there, but by far, this is what our student population is majoring in. Part of also this diversity talk is to talk about retention rates, which students talked about earlier. And something that is of interest to us and hopefully to everyone is that for first time college students, there was a big drop in 2008 across racial groups in terms of retention. And of course the largest drop was with Black students, and that was with 9.1% drop. They were drops all around, but that was the biggest one. And with Latinx students, it was a 3.7 drop of retention. What was interesting is that actually for transfer students, there was an increase across the board. And that increase for Latinx students was, let's see, I have it here. Is that seven? Yeah, 7.1% of increase for transfer students. So that's good to hear in terms of the services that the campus has for that group of student population. While we're here and very excited to talk about the diversity in our Hispanic Serving Institute institution, there are some issues that Latinx students face that have been heightened because of COVID, and you heard some of the students speaking about that earlier. Economic concerns, because we do deal with a lot of working class undergraduate students, but also working undergraduate students. So they have sometimes more jobs than I do. And especially because of COVID, they also had to increase that financial burden and also help with family and living through a pandemic. A lot of them are first generation college students. So there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot, so not, it's very hard to navigate spaces that you don't know. And if you're a first time college student, then you need extra help for those, not only institutional resources, but also cultural ones and on campus and community resources as well. We also have something called legal status with our Latinx students. So you mentioned, you heard a student testimonial about not having access to financial aid, but there's also what happens after graduation and job placement. That's also an issue. There's also institutional support that might not be there for students in terms of maybe sponsoring cultural events or having counselors available that understand, or that might be bilingual and bicultural in terms of knowledge, understanding. Faculty and staff that look like them, so students can relate to, and of course, coursework that reflects their heritage, where they might be able to feel a little bit closer to home or understand their identity within the nation. And I just kind of want to remind everyone that representation won't save us, action will, but that it is a first step in terms of making all students feel welcome on campus. Thank you.
Oh, Simone, you're on mute.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Thank you so much. I would ask that you forward the PowerPoint so that we can make this available in our next minutes and post it onto the Senate site for follow-up with anyone, for everyone. Thank you so much. Seeing that this is the end of our meeting, I would just like to wish everyone a warm, happy holiday season. I'd like to thank President Wu as well. I am excited about the future of Queens College. I know we are all tired of 2020, and we're looking forward to the awesome things that we are going to do in 2021. So a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
So moved. Thank you, everyone. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Simone.
Thanks, Simone.
Thank you. Happy holidays, everyone.